His words were theirs who live unforced to grieve and helped by calm the swaying wheels of life and the long restlessness of transient things and the trouble and passion of the unquiet world. As though her own bosom were pierced, the mother saw the ancient human sentence strike her child, her sweetness that deserved another fate, only a larger measure given of tears. Aspiring to the nature of the gods, a mind proof armored, mailed in mighty thoughts, a will entire couched behind wisdom's shield, though to still heavens of knowledge she had risen, though calm and wise and Ashtapati's queen, human was she still, and opened her doors to grief. The stony-eyed injustice she accused of the marble goddess of inflexible law, nor sought the strength extreme adversity brings to lives that stand direct and front the world power. Her heart appealed against the impartial judge, taxed with perversity, the impersonal one. Her tranquil spirit she called not to her aid, but as a common man, beneath his load, grows faint and breathes his pain in ignorant words, so now she arraigned the world's impassive will. What still the doom has crept across her path, emerging from the dark forest's sullen heart? What evil thing stood smiling by the way and o'er the beauty of the Shalwa boy? Perhaps he came an enemy from her past, armed with a hidden force of ancient wrongs, himself unknowing, and seized her unknown. Here, dreadfully entangled love and hate meet us, blind wanderers, mid the perils of time. Our days are links of a disastrous chain. Necessity avenges casual steps. Old cruelties come back unrecognized. The gods make use of our forgotten deeds. Yet all in vain the bitter law was made. Our own minds are the justicers of doom, for nothing have we learned, but still repeat our stark misuse of self and others' selves, and fallen from his ethereal element, love darkens to the spirit of nether gods. The dreadful angel, angry with his joys, woundingly sweet, he cannot yet forego, is pitiless to the soul, his gaze disarmed. He visits with his own pangs his quivering prey, forcing us to cling enamored to his grip, as if in love with our own agony. This is one poignant misery in the world, and grief has other lassos for our life. Our sympathies become our torturers. Strength have I, my own punishment to bear, knowing it just, but on this earth perplexed, smitten in the sorrows of scourged and helpless things, often it faints to meet other suffering eyes. We are not as the gods who know not grief and look impassive on a suffering world. Calm the gaze down on the little human scene and the short-lived passion crossing mortal hearts. An ancient tale of woe can move us still. We keep the ache of breasts that breed no more. We are shaken by the sight of human pain and share the miseries that others feel. Ours are not the passionless lids that cannot age. Too hard for us is heaven's indifference. Our own tragedies are not enough for us. All pathos and all sufferings we make ours. We have sorrow for a greatness passed away and feel the touch of tears in mortal things. Even a stranger's anguish rends my heart, and this, O Narada, is my well-loved child. Hide not from us our doom, if doom is ours. This is the worst, an unknown face of fate, a terror ominous, mute, felt more than seen. Behind our seat by day, our couch by night, a fate lurking in the shadow of our hearts, the anguish of the unseen that waits to strike. To know is best, however hard to bear. Then cried the sage, piercing the mother's heart, forcing to steal the will of Savitri. His words set free the spring of cosmic fate. The great gods use the pain of human hearts as a sharp axe to hew their cosmic road. They squander lavishly men's blood and tears for a moment's purpose in their fateful work. This cosmic nature's balance is not ours, nor the mystic measure of our need and use. A single word lets loose vast agencies. A casual act determines the world's fate. So now is set free destiny in that hour. The truth thou hast claimed, I give to thee the truth. A marvel of the meeting earth and heavens is he whom Savitri has chosen mid men. His figure is the front of nature's march. His single being excels the works of time. A sapphire cutting from the sleep of heaven, delightful is the soul of Satyavan. A ray out of the rapturous infinite, a silence waking to a hymn of joy. A divinity and kingliness gird his brow. His eyes keep a memory from a world of bliss, as brilliant as a lonely moon in heaven, gentle like the sweet bud that spring desires, pure like a stream that kisses silent banks. He takes with bright surprise spirit and sense. A living knot a golden paradise, a blue immense. He leans to the longing world. Time's joy, borrowed out of eternity, a star of splendor, or a rose of bliss. In him, soul and nature, equal presences, balance and fuse in a wide harmony. The happy in their bright ether have not hearts more sweet and true than this of mortal mate, that takes all joy as the world's native gift, and to all gives joy as the world's natural right. His speech carries a light of inner truth and a large-eyed communion with the power in common things has made veilless his mind. A seer in arch shapes of garbless deity, a tranquil breadth of sky, wingless and still, watching the world like a mind of unplumbed thought, a silent space, musing and luminous, uncovered by the morning to delight, a green tangle of trees upon a happy hill, made into a murmuring nest by southern winds. These are his images and parallels. His king in beauty, and in depth his peers. A will to climb lifts a delight to leap. Heaven's height, companion of earth beauty's charm, an aspiration to the immortal's air, laying on the lap of mortal ecstasy. His sweetness and his joy attract all hearts to live with his own in a glad tenancy. His strength is like a tower built to reach heaven, a godhead quarried from the stones of life. O loss, if death into its elements, of which his gracious envelope was built, shattered this vase before it breathes its sweets, as if earth could not keep too long from heaven a treasure thus unique, loaned by the gods, a being so rare, of so divine a make. In one brief year, when this bright hour flies back and perches careless on a branch of time, this sovereign glory ends, heaven lent to earth. This splendor vanishes from the mortal's sky. Heaven's greatness came, but was too great to stay. 12 swift-winged months are given to him and her. This day returning, Satyavan must die. A lightning bright and mute, the sentence fell. But the queen cried, "Vain then can be heaven's grace. Heaven mocks us with the brilliance of its gifts, for death is a cupbearer of the wine of too brief joy held up to mortal lips for a passionate moment by the careless gods. But I reject the grace and the mockery. Mounting thy car, go forth, O Savitri, and travel once more through the peopled lands. Alas, in the green gladness of the woods, thy heart has stooped to a misleading chord. Choose once again and leave this fated head. Death is the gardener of this wonder tree. Love's sweetness sleeps in his pale marble head, advancing in a honeyed line, but closed, a little joy would buy too bitter an end. Plead not thy choice, for death has made it vain. Thy youth and radiance were not born to lie, a casket void dropped on a careless soil. A choice less rare may call a happier fate. But Savitri answered from her violent heart. Her voice was calm, her face was fixed like steel. Once my heart chose, and chooses not again, the word I have spoken can never be erased. It is written in the record book of God. The truth once uttered, from the earth's air effaced, by mine forgotten, sounds immortally forever in the memory of time. Once the dice fall, thrown by the hand of fate, in an eternal moment of the gods, my heart has sealed its troth to Satyavan. Its signature adverse fate cannot efface. Its seal, not fate, not death, not time, dissolve. Those who shall part, who have grown one being within, death's grip can break our bodies, not our souls. If death take him, I too know how to die. Let fate do with me what she will or can. I am stronger than death and greater than my fate. My love shall outlast the world. Doom falls from me, helpless against my immortality. Fate's law may change, but not my spirit's will. An adamant will, she cast a speech like bronze, but in the queen's mind, listening her words, rang like the voice of a self-chosen doom, denying every issue of escape. To her own despair, answer the mother made. As one, she cried, who in her heavy heart labors amid the sobbing of her hopes to wake a note of help from sadder strings. O child, in the magnificence of thy soul, dwelling on the border of a greater world, and dazzled by the superhuman thoughts, thou lendst eternity to a mortal hope. Here on this mutable and ignorant earth, who is the lover and who is the friend? All passes here, nothing remains the same. None is for any on this transient globe. He whom thou lovest now, a stranger came, and into a far strangeness shall depart. His moment's part once done, upon life's stage, which for a time was given him from within, to other scenes he moves, other players, and laughs and weeps, meet faces new, unknown. The body thou hast loved is cast away amid the brute unchanging stuff of worlds to indifferent mighty nature, and becomes crude matter for the joy of others' lives. But for our souls, upon the wheel of God, forever turning, they arrive and go, merit and sunder in the magic round of the great dancer of the boundless dance. Our emotions are but high and dying notes of his wild music, changed compellingly by the passionate movements of a seeking heart in the incessant links of hour with hour. To call down heaven's distant answering song, to cry to an unceased bliss, is all we dare. Once ceased, we lose the heavenly music's sense. Too near, the rhythmic cry has fled or failed. All sweetnesses are baffling symbols here. Love dies before the lover in our breast. Our joys are perfumes in a brittle vase. Oh, then, what wreck is this upon time's sea, to spread life's sails to the hurricane desire and call for pilot the unseeing heart? O child, will thou proclaim, will thou then follow against the law that is the eternal will, the autarky of the rash titan's mood, to whom his own fierce will is the one law, in a world where truth is not, nor life, nor God? Only the gods can speak what now thou speakst. Thou who art human, think not like a god, for man, below the god, above the brute, is given the calm reason as his guide. He is not driven by an unthinking will, as are the actions of the bird and beast. He is not moved by stark necessity, like the senseless motion of inconscient things. The giants and the titans' furious march climbs to usurp the kingdom of the gods, or skirts the demon magnitudes of hell. In the unreflecting passion of their hearts, they dash their lives against the eternal law and fall and break by their own violent mass. The middle path is made for thinking men to choose his steps by reason's vigilant light, to choose his path among the many paths is given him. For each, his difficult goal hews out of infinite possibility. Leave not thy goal to follow a beautiful face. Only when thou hast climbed above thy mind and livest in the calm vastness of the One, can love be eternal in the eternal bliss, and love divine replace the human tie. There is a shrouded law, an austere force. It bids thee strengthen thy undying spirit. It offers its severe benignances of work and thought and measured grave delight as steps to climb to God's far secret heights. Then is our life a tranquil pilgrimage, each year a mile upon the heavenly way. Each dawn opens into a larger light. Thy acts are thy helpers, or events are signs. Waking and sleep are opportunities given to thee by an immortal power. So canst thou raise thy pure, unvanquished spirit till, spread to heaven in a wide vesper calm, indifferent and gentle as the sky, it greatens us slowly into timeless peace. But Savitri replied with steadfast eyes, "My will is part of the eternal will. My fate is what my spirit strength can make. My fate is what my spirit strength can bear. My strength is not the titans, it is God's. I have discovered my glad reality beyond my body in another's being. I have found the deep unchanging soul of love. Then how shall I desire lonely good or slave aspiring to white vacant peace, the endless hope that made my soul spring forth out of its infinite solitude and sleep? My spirit has glimpsed the glory for which it came, beating of one vast heart in the flame of things. My eternity, clasped by his eternity, and tireless of the sweet abysms of time, deep possibility always to love. This is first, last joy, and to its throb, the riches of 1,000 fortunate years are a poverty. Nothing to me are death and grief, or ordinary lives and happy days. And what to me are common souls of men, or eyes and lips that are not Satyavans? I have no need to draw back from his arms and the discovered paradise of his love and journey into a still infinity. Only now for my soul in Satyavan I treasure the rich occasion of my birth. In sunlight and a dream of immortal ways I shall walk with him like gods in paradise. If for a year, that year is all my life, and yet I know this is not all my fate, only to live and love a while and die. For I know now why my spirit came on earth, and who I am, and who he is I love. I have looked at him from my immortal self. I have seen God smile at me in Satyavan. I have seen the eternal in a human face." Then none could answer to her words. Silent, they sat and looked into the eyes of fate.